Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined today by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I am doing good. Now that the move is over, I'll probably talk about that a little bit in detail with some of our topics. But yeah, if you follow us regularly, you'll notice we skipped our last episode. That was because Ash and I were both extremely busy, having had a lot of things going on, and we just didn't want to put out a lower quality episode for you guys with everything that we had going on. So I figured just take the break, come back, and dive right back into podcasting once things settle down a little bit. Happy to report they mostly have on my end, but how about you, Ash? Are they settling down over there a little bit, or
as settled as they will ever be? So we are refreshed and ready to go.
Yeah. I should have added that asterisk at the end of mine. It's not, it's as settled as it can be, but yeah, we have some fun topics to get into today. A little bit of generative AI discussion. I feel like we have a topic related to that almost every episode now, just with the prevalence of that in creative spaces lately. And then we have a lot of fun reading focused topics this week as well. So those will be super fun to dive into. Before we do that, though, it's been a while, so let's get into a little bit of a reading update. Ash, I'll let you go first. Is there anything you're currently reading, or have the stresses of life kind of prevented you from opening a book lately?
Yeah, so reading's been definitely more challenging than usual. I'm happy to say I've been working on the book way more, which is nice, aside from like a couple, you know, family visiting and illness of some sort, Ross getting his wisdom teeth out. So reading has kind of taken a side seat, I guess. That's the best way to put it. I'm also absolutely, I feel like we say this every episode, and I want people to know it's genuinely true that I'm always brain dead at the end of the day. Like, I just don't. Yeah. But anyway, so I've been reading less, but I am working my way through an advanced copy of The Bane Witch. I'm blanking on the name of the author. It's kind of like if Gone Girl and Sabrina kind of meshed. So if any of you have read and or watched those two things, you'll understand. So it's okay so far. It's not compelling me a lot, but I'm intrigued to see where it goes. I'm also reading fan fiction. So it's actually been occupying way more of my time because it's a little bit less, it's just more relaxed and enjoyable. It's kind of a fluffy one. So anyway, that's what I'm reading.
Very cool. I actually picked up, I have it right here, but it's holding my phone up. It's called A Little Hatred by Joe Abercrombie. So it's set in the same world as his First Law trilogy, which I read recently. Mm. And this is one of the series that I actually touched on in one of our previous topics about the industrialization in fantasy. So this is the first book in that trilogy. So yeah, loving every bit of it so far. I'm sure I'll get through the whole trilogy very quickly, like I did with the last one, and then hit a reading slump again. So
yeah, that's how it goes. Yeah, I'm it's interesting because fan fiction always pulls me out of a reading slump, but then I like start to read normal people books, and then I'm like, well, but this isn't what I really want. So I hit these ebbs and flows of like reading nothing but fan fiction and then reading nothing but, you know, published work. So anyway, yeah. I was actually going to ask you if this was like the industrialized, you know, based off the topic we were talking about last time. So that's very cool. Yeah. Excited to hear what you think.
Yeah. I'm still, like in the first third, but, it's great so far. It reminds me a lot of the first book in the first trilogy. So that was my favorite one out of those three, book one, even though I know that's a hot take, for that series, but this one seems to have a lot of those elements that I liked from the first one, so happy to report that. Okay, let's look at no podcast updates for you guys, but if you haven't heard from our last two episodes, I think now Blades for Hire is available now. That is our dark fantasy mercenary anthology. You can pick that up on Amazon in ebook or print formats, and all of the profits from book sales will be going to the charity Book Trust, which just works to improve children's literacy around the world and give access to books, and just kind of create that love of reading that we all knew growing up. So you can get your fantasy fix and support a good cause is what I always say. And Ash and I are both featured in there. So No audience questions this week. And I did not also have any indie releases to spotlight, but if you know of any, or you have a book coming out soon, or that has come out recently that you would like us to spotlight, just let us know. And we'll be sure to give you a shout out on our next episode of Quill and Query. Okay, Ash, I think that's all for like the podcast updates. I kind of ran through those real quick. Yeah.
No, that's okay. It's been I feel like we go through like a little bit of a slump at the beginning of the spring, because last year, you know, it was like kind of getting started, seeing how we were working and all this kind of stuff. And now that we're in a good groove now. But yeah, after a while, you're kind of like, well, I don't really have anything to report.
Yeah.
So it's totally fine.
Yeah, well, with that out of the way, I guess we can just jump right into our weekly topics then, if you're good with that.
Sure.
Going to start with like the more business focused topics and publishing industry related ones first. The first one I have is pirated books and AI. So this one actually came up a couple weeks ago, but as I said, we skipped our last episode, so didn't have a chance to cover it yet. But there were some recent developments. Also, sorry, I'm glitching out on TikTok. There were some recent developments where we learned that a significant number of pirated books were being used to train various AI models, specifically for like Meta, but I believe there were also others involved. And I wanted to explore this because I've seen a lot of, I mean, I think I know where we both stand on this, but I just wanted to draw attention to it and kind of just talk about it on the podcast, because I think it's an important issue to bring attention to. So first, I guess I'll ask, have you seen anything about this topic? Like, did you dive into it at all, with the LibGen, pirated books, and how they were being used to train AI models?
So I didn't dive in deeply. I think by the time this was coming out, I had family visiting, so I was unable, and then, you know, catching up on stuff. I did see a lot of posts about it though. And then it ended up coming up in discussion in book club last week. Just briefly. And from what I know, it just seems like this is kind of, unfortunately, I mean, I'm obviously in full not support of Gen AI at all. Yeah. And I'm still a very staunch, like, you know, don't use ChatGPT if you can help it kind of a person. I know other people vary, but, you know, when it comes to the Gen AI stuff, I'm fully in 100% anti-Gen AI. So, but I'm also on the other side. This just seems, unfortunately, like where we're at now. Like, it seems par for the course with Gen AI and like training models.
Yeah.
I also have, I just don't, like, one, I don't understand, right? Like, I just don't understand how these companies, I mean, it's Meta, so not fully surprising, but
yeah,
how Meta can get away with this legally, you know, especially if it's like a pirated source. It just reminds me of those like old early 2000s, late 90s, like, you wouldn't pirate a whatever,
and yeah, that's
like the, you know, the anti-piracy thing that would show up at the beginning of your DVD. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. So I have obviously a ton of feelings on it. I just don't know how we prevent this going forward, how authors protect themselves legally, especially when putting their work on platforms like Amazon, or using Facebook. Like, I know a fair few authors who have their own private, like their version of Discord, but it's their Facebook group for their writing.
Yeah.
Where snippets are shared and things like that. Like, how do you protect your intellectual property in the new world of Gen AI, especially when you don't know when it's happening to you or how? So yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be clear to anyone who's been listening that obviously against pirating books, against using pirated books to train Gen AI. So I just want to say that right off the bat. And then this one, I think, to touch on your point of how do they get away with this, I've always thought it's just because, you know, it's new territory that we're treading with Gen AI. It's almost like we're seeing in real time scenarios that we did not have laws for, to some degree.
True. That's a good point.
And so we're kind of finding out like how those, I guess, I'm trying to find the right way to phrase this, how those laws come to be. And I think we're still in the early stages of fighting those intellectual property battles. And I think it can be really difficult, especially in the self-published space where you may not have the budget to pursue those legal battles.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely against it. I don't think it's, I tell people not to pirate books individually. So obviously very against an AI model being trained on pirated books. I don't like that at all. I'm not as opposed. I'm going to throw something out there that's maybe controversial. If people are willing to provide their training data to an AI, and they come to an agreement that's like compensated fairly, whatever, I personally wouldn't do that. But if that's something someone wants to do, I think that's a more appropriate transaction, if that makes sense, or use of their intellectual property. Like, I don't think you should be able to use someone else's IP to train these AIs without their permission, because then its output is being informed by that.
That's an extremely fair thing. I mean, I agree. I think if you want to, sorry, also Mira is now in the back.
No, it's all good.
Around. If you want to, it's all about consent, in my opinion, right?
Right.
Like, did I consent for my work? Yes. You know, if I find that my work has been, I remember Elizabeth, I think, maybe this might have been, I could be lying. So Elizabeth, don't come for me if this is the case. She found her book on like a pirated website, like the minute it came out or something like that. It had already been uploaded somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, how many authors are aware that their books have even been pirated, especially in the self-published space, which is in of itself its own beast to tackle. And I don't think, you know, we are the kids of YouTube to MP3, you know, torrent music, you know, like we understand how this happens, but at the same time, it's like, you know, how do authors protect themselves? And if they want to consent, where do those consents end? You know, it's like if someone comes to you and says, hey, like, sorry.
She's good.
you know, if how far does that consent go legally? You know, the legal terms of like, okay, if I consent for it to be trained, but then I see that I can see it's been influenced to then make money. Like, I don't know. Again, you're right. You're totally right about we are in a new total legal realm of things. But I guess I just haven't, or maybe I need to look better, which is probably the point. But just haven't seen any lawyers or any firms come forward be like, we are going to be at the forefront of intellectual property for authors and making sure their content, you know, when it comes to piracy and all this kind of stuff, isn't, you know, being used for this. And I'm sure it's not lucrative, which is probably why it's not that big of a a mission for these places, but it's a slippery slope, you know. It's like it's a big old ball of muck. But yeah, if you consent to it, fine. It's like the old South Park episode, the iPad episode, where you hit consent to the iPad and then they make you do all this crazy stuff. And you're like, well, I didn't read the fine print. And they're like, you didn't read the fine print?
Yeah.
It's like, none of us do. But now that's dangerous at this point, you know, when you accept the terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, no, this is actually kind of scary, and I'm not smart enough or knowledgeable enough to know when to say yes or no. So anyway,
yeah, and the interesting thing with I think pirated books in the self-published space is that for indie authors, a lot of the heavy lifting in that regard to enforcing that is on the indie author. Like, I've seen I don't know all the details behind it, but I've seen people who say my book was pirated and then Amazon sent me like a notice that they were going to take my book down because it was available elsewhere. Interesting, because you would think if Amazon's the one hosting the book, they have the digital rights management, the DRM to enforce that. But I definitely need to do some more research in that regard, because I feel like there's got to be a better way for self-published authors to enforce their copyright, protect their IP, especially from those generative AI models.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of I don't think KDP has any tools in this regard at the moment. I may be wrong in that, but I know a lot of the tools I use for like my day job, we go in and we check off the use our data to train AI just right off the bat. Like, we just, because we do a lot of web design, so we don't want our intellectual property, like our brand design, to be training the models they're trying to develop. So, yeah, some sort of protections in, hey, Michael, how are you doing? Some sort of protections, I think, in KDP, some sort of tools that would like help you enforce that, those protections for your books would be great, because it, I think it can be difficult to even know where to start. Like when you get that notice from Amazon or whoever, that your book is being pirated, you're like, okay, what do I do about that?
It's amazing that KDP doesn't have like a team for that, you know, in comparison to their whole, it's just like, oh, hey, like reach out to someone and we'll, you know, we'll spend this much time trying to help you get it taken down. Or, you know, the penalty is there is none. Like, I don't know. How can you look at someone and say, oh, yeah, your stuff's been pirated, but because it's pirated, like we have to take it down.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem, it's a new world for sure. And I understand it. It's probably like low on the totem pole of things to worry about, especially in this current climate. But, you know, it's, yeah, it pisses me off.
Understandably. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll, like we said, always be touching on Gen AI in some way, just with how prevalent it is in the industry at the moment and all the questions that come up surrounding it, legally and ethically and all of those things. But I want to switch gears to another ethically controversial topic to some degree. So it's been recently announced that the writing challenge NaNoWriMo will be coming to an end soon. They cited several reasons, some community backlash about allowing AI use in the competition, which I have some thoughts on. And then they had various controversies and financial struggles as well. So NaNoWriMo going away after 25 years, I'm sure something will come along to replace it. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this and know if you ever participated. Personally, I didn't. I had planned to sometimes, but then I always backed out just because it seemed way too stressful. And I have never written something of that scale that quickly. So I was always cheering people on from the sidelines, though. So there's that I won't be able to do anymore. But yeah, did you ever participate in NaNoWriMo? And then what are your thoughts on it going away?
So I did participate, or at least I tried to multiple times, all failures, because I was by the time I started getting into it, I was in college, and just, you know how that goes, it's November's time for crunch season for exams and papers and things. So I always like started and stopped, and I attempted multiple times. I don't know how to feel, and I think it's because I never officially like completed it. I didn't have that sense of completion. It was really hard to make, again, please don't hold me to this, because I'm sure for some people they have an amazing community on NaNoWriMo, but the community, like, building that seemed a little challenging. But other than that, I really don't have much an opinion on this. It is crazy to allow AI in the competition, right? That was, like, the whole issue, or the main issue why people were like, oh, this is allowed and we're not checking this for AI, but it seemed... The whole point is because it is a challenge, right? Like 50,000 words in a month is bafflingly insane. Mm-hmm. And thousands of people try to attempt it every year. It's like a marathon, but you can't AI your way to the finish line in a marathon. So to allow that seemed strange. And I, you know, it's like kind of like that Grammarly argument. If like you're using it for spell check on whatever, like, does that count as AI? And it just seems like the rules were very obtuse in that regard. But, you know, it just seems weird that a worldwide phenomenon would allow something like that. Like the whole thing is to try and get you to finish and like say that you wrote something that large and big in that scale in such a short time. And it takes away the impressiveness of it all.
Yeah, definitely.
If you say you used it, and I don't know the details. This happened kind of recently, and I just haven't been paying attention. My mind's been too filled with other stuff. But it's interesting to me. I hope there was a discussion instead of just being like, "Oh, we've noticed that this is a thing, so we're just going to arbitrarily say we allow it."
Yeah.
And it kind of sucks for like the writers who didn't use AI and then completed it, and then now they have to doubt whether or not the winner was influenced or used AI. I don't know. It's definitely a beast. I'm just tired of this AI.
Yeah.
So over it. Yeah. What about you? What are your thoughts on it?
I have a few different thoughts. I guess the first one I'll start on is the allowing generative AI. I wasn't able to find anything on like the details of how much is allowed. Just like it seemed like a blanket statement that you can use Gen AI, and no further elaboration. Which to me is, if they had maybe gone a little further in detail and explained the acceptable uses, then I could kind of go through those one by one and decide like, do I agree with this? Do I disagree with it? Most likely would disagree with it. But if it was something like, you can use AI to give you your prompt for the month and then that's it, like something like that, I'd be like, okay, cool. Sure, I don't care. But as far as like allowing AI to do the writing, that almost seems completely antithetical to the whole purpose of the challenge, which is to write 50,000 words or so in a month. The best comparison I saw in the comments was, this is like signing up for a marathon and then being allowed to drive your car through the to the finish line.
See if the marathon analogy works well, because it's true. And it's like, you know, if you're going to allow Gen AI, then make that its own category. Like best Gen AI written novel. But you have to click a box that says this was assisted with, I don't know.
Yeah, and they just something.
Didn't do that. It was almost like kind of conspiracy theory moment, like self-sabotage. They're like, we're dead. No, I'm just kidding. But
I imagine that might be some of it, though. Like running a nonprofit event like this that only gets bigger and bigger for 25 years probably gets exhausting just with the amount of management work involved. But yeah, I personally never participated, as I said. So it's not like a huge loss for me. And this, I hope this isn't like coming off insensitive to anyone who did participate, but I feel like without the organization, you can still do this if you want to. I know the community is like a big part of accountability for the challenge and whatnot, but I feel like if you have a close group of writer friends who want to do something like this, you could easily do something on a smaller scale. That kind of keeps the same spirit. So I don't think it's a huge loss. I hope that's not controversial to say. But I mean, especially given like the pivot to AI and all the various controversies they were dealing with over the past couple of years, I just think the organization doesn't own the idea or the challenge itself. So it can still live on if that was a tradition that you enjoyed partaking in.
I also wonder, it's probably not true, but I wonder how much of the rise in self-publishing has kind of affected the concept of NaNoWriMo, where it's like, oh, if you win, like we'll assist you in essentially getting your name out there and helping with publishing and, you know, whatever the winnings were. I wonder if a rise in that and then like a rise in other forums like Discord or things like that have kind of taken the, like you said, like the power away almost from a community like that. It's not necessary anymore, really, in this world of like TikTok lives and, you know, other apps and things like that allow you to connect with people in a really heavy writing sense. Like, you know, Elizabeth's Discord is very heavily like, we're doing 15-minute writing sprints and like, here's this and that. And so, yeah, I wonder how much of that, if anything, affected it. So
Writing sprints are a big thing, especially on TikTok Live. I know people do them in Discord, like you said. And they're like on a much smaller scale, usually like a few minutes, few hours of on and off writing sprints. So I wonder if people have also pivoted towards that as opposed to like a month long challenge, which can also probably lead to a lot of burnout.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it makes sense.
I just got a really loud Discord notification, so I hope no one else heard that.
Speaking of, its ears were ringing.
Okay, well, those are like publishing and business focused topics. So we're going to pause for a minute and do our work in progress check-in. Now, mine is shameful. I have done no writing because, as I've said, I was moving and I am someone who needs to be comfortable and settled. Like, I need the room to be clean. I need the mood to be right to write. And it's very hard to establish that when you are moving and there's boxes everywhere. And you have a puppy running around who's stressed out about all the boxes.
She
settles so quickly. Like, even if we're going on vacation, she makes herself right at home, like in the first day. So she is super easy in that regard, thankfully, because I've definitely had dogs who weren't. So, but yeah, she's great. And now that I'm settled, I'm hoping to get back into writing starting this weekend after like some major work projects are taken care of first, trying to focus on those. But once those die down, now that I'm settled, kind of established my writing routine again, slowly but surely. So, but yeah, no writing done over the past couple of weeks, just with all that going on. What about you?
First, want to say hi, Nicole. What's up?
Oh, good to see you, Nicole.
So I've actually, obviously, we've established this episode that March was crazy, but I have gotten in a really good habit of like working at little things here and there. This past week, I definitely, especially this week, I'm like, oof, I'm missing the habit, which feels really good to miss kind of working on it slowly. So when it comes to writing, I wrote like a quick short story for a competition, still waiting to hear back. I think they're currently on round two. I guess we won't find out really until May, which is, I hate waiting that long. So yeah, I wrote that, which was really fun and was a good challenge because it had to be 2,000 words or less. And that was like, as we all know who I am, I really I'm very long-winded. And then I submitted some poems, edited some of those. So yeah, I've just really just been working on the outline, detailed outlining. I'm definitely way farther behind than I want to be, but that feels like a good motivation right now. I feel positively motivated to work on it, and I find myself wanting versus that mindset of I need to do this, which feels good. So yeah, I've got a couple chapters outlined, which is awesome. I know fully now, I think I talked about this last episode, but fully know part one all fleshed out, still behind me, like the big moments. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. So it feels good, little ups and downs just because it's busy time of year. So yeah, that's my reading update.
Very cool. So it sounds like you're making good progress on the goals you've established at the beginning of the year. Super happy to hear that. And I've noticed you've done a lot more posts for Filthy Hunger too. Those are always fun to see. So I always like seeing more into that world.
Thanks. I actually forgot to post last week and I'm like, oh, I need to post something this week. Because I like, I was having so much fun like putting them together and creating them. And then just like life gets in the way. I need to get better at that. But yeah.
Nicole definitely wants to hear your poetry sometime, and she's also sounds like she's struggling with an online group project, which I can definitely relate to. Those are the worst, especially online when there's like no way to keep people accountable. It's difficult.
Yeah, I felt like the anthology was like a little bit of a group project, but we weren't like we all elected to do it. It's a bit different when you're forced to do it. I think that like that's like a very important distinction of like we have a deadline and we all have to get our pieces of the puzzle together. But when you're like, I totally understand the college thing. It's just like, oh my God.
That's an interesting point. I never really looked at like a group project or I guess the anthology as like a huge group project like that. But yeah, everyone definitely pulled their weight with that. Like I didn't have to worry as much. As I did with like school projects for that. That was
right.
So interesting, different experiences there for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our weekly or not weekly, but our writing check-in. now we'll get into our writing topics. So this first one here, Ash, I think we've touched on this broadly a little bit in the past, but I kind of wanted to dive into it and see if we've changed, if we vary here and just how it kind of affects our writing. So the topic is book length. And so I wanted to know as a reader first, what length of books do you tend to gravitate towards lately? And is it more based on word count, page count, series length, things like that? And then have you noticed this affect your writing plans as of late, like with A Filthy Hunger and even the short stories you write? Have you noticed any kind of correlation between the two there?
That's a good question. I don't actually care about book length. I've never not in like the way of like I don't care. It's like it's just never been a consideration for me.
It's not a deciding factor.
No, it's not. Yeah. It really isn't. I think my bookshelves are a great example of like from thin to thick. I think if you were to ask me like what your like preferred length is, what you're doing. I'd say like in the 350 to 400 page range. I think that's a really solidly good, like, good novel. And especially for like a first, which I think is like where I'm trying to go with Filthy Hunger, the first book, because, you know, each book kind of gets a little bigger and bigger as you go along.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to worry too much about length right now when it comes to the drafting process, because if I do, I'm going to panic. And so I'm just not going to worry about that until the editing comes around. But I love some thick bitches. I love thick, but I mean, I love like, you know, Priory of the Orange Tree, 700 plus 1,000 pages. I love it.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, I think like a middle, like 350 to 500 is where I usually tend to find most of my books balanced towards. Mm-hmm. But I don't, that's not something, I'm not going to look at a book and be like, that's too big for me to read if I'm really interested in the premise.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat. I was going to say for me, it's like 400 to 500. That's actually what most of Mr. Abercrombie's books are. And yeah. I found that I'm gravitating towards those a lot lately. Yeah. It, to me, that's like the perfect length for most of the books that I'm reading. But like you, I'm also not opposed to shorter or longer books. Like, I mean, my favorite author is a perfect testament to that. George R. R. Martin obviously has some thick books over there. So yeah, I love those. I love my mm-hmm. Stormlight Archive on the shelf. Just mm-hmm. I just can't read 1,000, 1,200 page books all the time. So I'm someone who needs variety. So if I read like a really long book, I'm probably going to read a couple really short books after that. Yeah. As for how that like affects my writing, like you, I try not to stress about it too much, but I do have like a broad word count goal of like 100 to 120, just based on both the debut fantasy novels that I've liked and the, and some of the other not debut, but, like traditionally published fantasy novels that I've liked, just so I can kind of keep an eye on the story structure and make sure it's shaping up how I want to over like the right amount of pages. Again, not trying to stick to it like too strictly, but just, it helps me pace better, if that makes sense, as I'm writing.
Yeah.
Like if I'm shooting for 100 to 120,000, I'm not going to be super stressed if I'm over or under that to some degree. It's just kind of how I envision, or how long I envision the story to need, yeah. if that makes sense. And no, knowing that length helps me pace as I'm writing. But yeah.
No, I think so. You actually just, you know, triggered a thought for me. Mm-hmm. So I guess in terms of total length, I don't really have a goal, but I do try and match each of my chapters to the same rough word length.
Yeah.
So if I'm at a solid like average 3,500 words a chapter right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've noticed like one chapter will be a little bit shorter. So I'm like, okay, I have to either beef this up or make the others kind of like take some stuff out to match. So I guess I do kind of pay attention there.
Gotcha.
It's not super strict, but yeah, cause you definitely don't, you want it to be balanced, like you said, and, mm-hmm. and you know, be contained, because if you don't contain it, you'll go too crazy. And Nicole brings up a good point with like audiobooks. I'm actually not a huge audiobook person, but when I do, if it's like over 8 hours, I'm definitely like, ugh, okay. Yeah. But if it's a big book, I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, yes, I love this. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely on the longer side for audiobooks, but I would say anywhere from 10 to 20 for me. And then getting beyond that, you guys are going to.
This book is over 20 hours.
Sanderson and Martin have some, some massive audiobooks. I think First Law are all under 20, but over 10.
Okay.
Nicole says she loves a 24-hour audiobook. Yeah, just whole day thing.
Stronger than me.
I got this because it was one credit and it was on Audible, but you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but it is the entire history and decline of the Roman Empire. It is like 125 hours. It is massive. And I only got it because for like it was one credit. So I was like, it's 120 hours of listening. I'm not going to not use one of my credits for that. I don't know why I turned yellow on my camera feed here too. That's so weird. I'm going to have to try and fix that in post.
Okay. That's baffling. I could absolutely never do. See, I could do like a 3-hour long YouTube deep dive internet like analysis.
Yeah,
I
can listen to YouTube all day. That's
which
a different
I tend
story.
To do. I actually listen to a lot of my podcasts on YouTube if they have like a
the same. That's where I go.
Because I just enjoy like seeing their faces and stuff. But 24 hours is 120 plus. That is
yeah. Insane. Now I have not listened to it yet. This is it's one of those things where I want to have like the physical copy so I can read along, and then when I'm not actively reading, I can listen to it and then kind of speed through it, but using both mediums.
Wow.
Because it's also it's a history book, so I don't want to absorb the full 120 hours through audio, because I'm someone who will I'll retain that information better if I'm actually reading it. It was really more just about like the value proposition of I get 120 hours for one credit, or I can get this 8-hour book for one credit.
I mean, I admire it. As like a history person, I totally understand. But man, it's like almost like Guns, Germs, and Steel being like 70 hours long. It's just like, yeah. Oh God, it's a lot, you know. And you're right. Like you just don't absorb it if you read it, which is why I have such a problem sometimes with audiobooks. I don't like speeding up the voices because then it sounds like I'm in like a Mickey Mouse cartoon.
Yeah.
But it also reads too slow for me because I'm a fast reader. I didn't mean to say it that like I'm a fast reader,
yeah.
But you know, I'm like a fast reader. So my brain's just working quicker than I think the audiobook can allow without it yet turning into like,
yeah, I've run into that problem a lot where I'm either thinking faster or slower than the pace of the speaker. So that's the main reason I don't use audiobooks as like my main way to consume books, just because like if I listen to a whole book on audiobook, I'm not going to retain as much of it as if I had read the physical copy. And it's the same with ebooks too, just because I get so distracted if I'm reading on my phone and I don't have like a dedicated Kindle device.
So that's actually been a game changer for me recently with reading. I've been really enjoying it, especially because you can download fan fiction to your Kindle and then whatever tap through, which is nice. But the speed at which I can just click through is really nice. Not that it's like that between turning a page, but when you are someone who has like I only have 20 minutes, you know,
right,
and you know you're tapping through and you think you're going faster, I don't know what psychological crap that is, but it's definitely like I don't know. And also you get to see the little percentage at the bottom. Again, I understand that when you're holding a physical book you can see how much you have left, so
yeah.
I get it, but there's something so satisfying about making that little percentage number go up and up. Like
I totally agree.
Flying through my fan fiction last night, by the time I finally was like I'm too tired to read, I was like yes, like 15%.
I love that. I love that percentage like so much that I like mentally do that when I'm reading a physical book. I'll be like, I'm 50 pages through in this 500 page book. I'm 10% done.
Yes.
So I totally do that. Also Yellowface is back, so that's great.
Jaundice action over here.
Yeah. Reading on the Kindle is easier for me because I do the treadmill and I can also read lying on my side. Nicole. So yeah. Kindle sounds great for comfort. I definitely need to get one.
This is a minuses for sure. Yeah.
I definitely need one because I can't do ebooks on my phone. There's too many distractions on there.
Yeah, no, the same exact way. And it's like a little it's just a little too small on the glare and stuff. It was funny though. I was at the dermatologist yesterday, and I have like a sling like thing just to carry my wallet and stuff. So
yeah,
and the Kindle fits perfectly in there.
Nice.
So I'm like sitting there like in my little thingy, like waiting for the dermatologist to come in, and I'm just like reading. Then they walked in and they were like, do you want me to take that? And I was like, yeah, just you can put it on my clothes. That's
fine. Well, you touched on this a little bit. It's not one of our topics in the doc, but I wanted to touch on this now that you mentioned it. Audiobook speed. So you said you can't speed up the voices, right?
No.
Can you slow them down, or do you just need that single 1.0? Okay.
So, I already have a hard time with certain narrators. If the narrator isn't close enough to what I think that the because I don't know if you're this way, the narrator in my head for certain books always has like a different tone of voice. It's never quite my voice. It's not like Ash's narrating.
Yeah.
If the narrator doesn't really match close enough, it's never really going to be exact, then it throws me off a little bit. And then when the voices come in to do different people, especially if it's a woman doing a man's voice, a man doing a woman's voice. This is really just, more often than not, it's for books that I've already kind of read and I'm re-listening to for book club or something like that. But even then, when I read the synopsis of a story and the audiobook starts and it just doesn't match at all with what I'd like, then I can't feel immersed much anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's just my own preference. So if it's like a narrator that I don't mind and then I try and speed him up, it just throws me off. And I know some people who do books at like 150, mm-hmm. right? To just like get through, and I'm like, it really does. And I also feel like when you speed it up, those like maybe like really heavy moments or mm-hmm. those tense moments or those passionate moments, whatever, these like very important moments of brevity,
yeah,
it gets lost because you're just trying to whip through. So if that's your purpose, agreed. That's totally fine. But if you're really trying to absorb the book, it just seems like it doesn't really for Nicole says I used 1.2 times, but the narrator for Tress was so slow I had 2 times. But I'm also very picky on narrators. Yeah, I mean, genuinely, it is like based off of what you like. But for me, it's very strong feelings about audiobook speed.
Yeah. For me, I hover between like 0.75 and 1.25 because okay. that is the range I've found that I can usually adjust without like it sounding comical.
Right.
So, and it all depends on like a variety of factors, like one, how fast the narrator's talking. If they're already a naturally fast speaker, I'll either leave it at 1 or slow it down slightly. Mm-hmm. And then it also depends on like if I'm multitasking or something and I'm going to retain less information, then I'll slow it down. Or sometimes if I'm doing something that's a little more, like if I'm working out and I have more energy and I can like think, mm-hmm. You know, I might speed it up a little bit. So it kind of just depends on the mood I'm in and then also the speed that the narrator is naturally speaking in. But I definitely never go outside of those ranges because it sounds like ridiculous to me when I change their voice that much. I've known people who have listened to books on like 2x speed and I don't know how they do it.
I just feel like you're missing a lot of it. And my mom is a voracious audiobook listener. I mean, mm-hmm. she has a farm. So she, when she's out and about or cleaning the house or doing anything, she literally is like, she just goes through so many books and I'm so impressed by her ability to listen. And I don't know if YouTube has ruined me. It probably is some like psychological, like you're just used to constant input feed, but I think I'm just so used to the natural cadence of people talking in a it just feels better to me, and I'll get distracted easily, like you said. So if it's mm-hmm. like too fast, I've missed a good chunk, but if it's too slow, I'm like bored and like, you know.
That's a good point, because I can listen to a podcast even if I'm doing something like super involved and super mm-hmm. mentally taxing, but I can't listen to an audiobook because I feel like it's a lot more mental energy to process.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I listen to a lot of like especially during the, I mean, I my brain is always dead by the end of the day because I use it all day. Everyone uses their brain for their job. I'm not trying to say that, but I do research all day, which takes like, in my opinion, just a little bit, a different kind of, you know, mindset. Mm-hmm. But so I'll have like Pod Save America on in the background or something like that, like something political or economic or whatever going on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are moments that go by that I'm like, I didn't really absorb any of that. And I'll go back and, you know, re-listen. But with an audiobook, it's almost like I want to sit and listen, which is why for me, I almost exclusively only listen to audiobooks if I'm driving for a really long time.
Yeah, it can be good for that. Going
somewhere or, like especially if I'm going to visit my parents or something, I'll just put one on. But yeah, around the house and stuff, I just get too distracted.
Yeah, the same. Yeah. Looks like Nicole wants to own your parents' farm, by the way. And
pretty amazing. It's like completely natural. They don't use machinery on it. They just had cool. 5 surprise lambs over the last week. My mom just like walked outside and she was like, oh, we have lambs. And I was like, okay. So anyway, pretty cool stuff. It's hard though. They like lost some chickens. They lost some sheep. And so it's not.
Yeah.
It's fun, but it has like a tough side.
Yeah, it gives me some perspective on my stressors. I've never walked outside and just discovered that I have 5 newborn animals to take care of. So that's
right. Yeah. And they didn't come at the same time either. She mm-hmm. like sorry, this is like a complete tangent. No one really cares okay. about. But she like she'd lost two sheep and the lambs inside because there was just some issues with both of them, which was really sad because she was excited, obviously. And then she like goes out, lets them out one morning, and then like just a few hours later comes back out. This was on April 1st. And she just FaceTimes me and she goes, "The lambs! Do you see the lambs?" And I couldn't because she's not very tech savvy, which is fine. But when she's trying to show you something and you just like see her sweater, you're like, I can't see anything. I thought she was April Fooling me. And then she just turns the camera around and she's like, "Two lambs." And then the next day she's like, "We have another lamb." And then yesterday I'm working out and she goes, "Surprise!" And there's just two more. And I was like, "Okay, great." Like now you have five more lambs. So yeah. Anyway, but yeah, Nicole says I volunteer at a senior horse sanctuary and it's a lot for sure. Little lambs. Yeah, it is a lot to take care of, but sometimes fun, obviously. Surprise. They named one April, another Fool, one Perseverance, Percy for short. And I'm not sure what they've named the other two.
So, anyway, poor second guy there.
That's the farm update that nobody asked for.
That's all good. Okay, well, I'm gonna move us over to our next topic. I don't have anything to add for the
writing adjacent. Let's get back into it.
Yeah, I unfortunately did not have surprise lambs over April Fools, so you're gonna be alone in that experience.
Yep, it's a very unique one, that's for sure.
Okay, well, you touched on this a little bit when you were talking about fan fiction and how it helps you get out of a slump. So maybe we can dive into that a little more.
Yeah.
I wanted to see if you had any advice for anyone who is dealing with a reading slump or what you usually do to get out of one and how you kind of manage that. Because I know reading slumps are very common for me, especially after finishing like a book or a series. And I have like certain ways I manage that, but I was curious to hear from you what your methods are as well.
Yeah, I guess my first piece of advice, because it's something I'm trying to practice myself, and I've been doing a pretty good job with it, is that don't worry about it. It's not, you having a reading slump is not an indicator of anything. Unless, like, reading is your job or how you make money, like, for, you know, a lot of people on TikTok, that's how they make their money. They just, like, go through books and that's all they talk about. You know, that's understandable and makes sense why they can read 200 plus books a year, because that's what they do. But for the average person like us, who's just trying her best and has social life and, you know, work and home and all that kind of stuff, you don't have to read a lot. So if you're in a slump and you haven't read for a couple months, okay, that's fine, because I'm sure it's been filled with other also important things.
Yeah.
I also think, like, there's nothing wrong with competition at all, but I think Goodreads kind of started this whole thing. And it's not a bad thing. I'm truly not saying that this is a bad thing, because I understand people really enjoy keeping track of what they read. But I think this kind of competition of reading and hitting, like, your 50-plus goal books a year and showing everybody and clocking it publicly leads to a sense of inadequacy for those of us who don't read or don't read as much or don't read like we used to. Like, in middle school and high school, I would hit, like, 200 books a year because I was just reading all the time.
Yeah.
But that's because I had a very different lifestyle than I do now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think some of us feel a pressure to kind of meet the status quo for people who do read voraciously, and, you know, you see them update their book status on Goodreads every day. Anyway, pressure is off for that. Don't worry about that. Ways to get out of a slump. So for me, it's fan fiction. It's not that fan fiction isn't any less well written, because the one I'm reading now is absolutely fantastic. It's like if Jane Austen met, very like Jane Austen-esque and well-written and well-constructed and beautifully done.
Yeah.
But because they're characters I know and because it's a little bit on the lighter end of things, I don't feel like I have to give as much focus to it. So when I don't want to watch TV, but I want to read something, but I don't want to crack open a new book, or, again, I'm a mood reader, it's just not what I really want to read, fan fiction. But for those who are not into fan fiction, reread a favorite. If if you haven't reread one of your faves in a really long time, if it's been a few years, pick it up. Pick it up and start to reread. And if it's sometimes that's what triggers me to then just like go into like a really crazy reading high. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, what other book is going to hit this? And then I see what I've got. So those are my answers. What about you? How do you get out of a reading slump, Brandon?
Yeah, this is interesting because I get these slumps with all of my like entertainment consumption. So like movies, shows, games, all of it. It's just I hit these slumps when I complete like a series of games or I get through a trilogy of movies. I just kind of fall into this hole of I don't know what to do next. And there's so many choices. Something that I found that kind of works across all of those is one, getting away from anything that makes it feel like a chore more than a hobby. So like you said, the Goodreads stuff, that stuff stresses me out more than, I know for some people it really like, it makes the act of reading more fun and you get to keep up with, you know, your goal and everything like that. I think that's totally fine. That's just not how it works for me. So, kind of eliminating things like that, that add to the pressure of, I need to read a book right now, or I'm not making progress to my goal. Because like you, I believe you said you're a mood reader as well. I'm a very big mood reader. I'm a mood gamer, mood watcher, whatever you want to call me. Just whatever I'm in the mood to consume, I guess, is what I'll gravitate towards. So, it's not always going to be consistent with like a goal structure that I set. So I've completely gotten rid of any significant expectations on my side of like, I need to play this many games or watch this many movies or read this many books, just getting rid of that mindset and going back to it as this is what I do to relax after I've done all my household chores. I've finished work for the day. This is how I want to enjoy my time. So I want to enjoy my time.
Right.
That alone has reduced the amount of slumps I get. And it's made them last shorter. So that mindset of approaching it as my hobby definitely helps. But when I am in a slump still, because I still do get them, it helps to go back to old favorites, like you said, and then go with variety is another big thing for me. So if I read a dark fantasy, sometimes if I'm picking up other dark fantasies, they're not going to hit the same way the one I just read.
Interesting.
So I'll switch from dark fantasy to maybe a sci-fi book I have on the shelf or something more historical. Just kind of throwing in some variety there. And that works for all of my hobbies as well. So like if I watched horror series, I probably won't watch another back-to-back horror franchise. I'll probably switch. Yeah. So I like to throw in some variety. I approach it with that fun mindset. Also, someone's driving very fast, so sorry. But yeah, last year that was a big struggle for me, was like that pressure of almost forcing myself to enjoy things when I wasn't enjoying them. So that has helped a lot this year. And then allowing myself to do what I want to do. So like not feeling pressured to pick up the latest game or pick up the latest book if I'm not in the mood to get to it right now. You know, just going with where my gut, or I guess my brain, is telling me I want to go. And I think also reading like, we touched on earlier, something of a different length. So if I just read through a really long book or a really long series, I'll go with something shorter, because it's less of a commitment. And then I don't feel like I can usually get through those pretty quickly. So I got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but those are that's kind of how I manage slumps when I do still get them. And then and then sometimes maybe I'm just not in a mood for reading. Like I also have made peace with that as well. Like if I'm picking up several books and they're not working or I'm just not getting into them, sometimes I just take that as a signal. Okay, I just need to take a break from reading. Or same with the other things. Like, okay, I've enjoyed these last few movies I've watched. I'm going to step back from movies for a bit. I don't want to watch anything right now. I think that can apply to virtually any hobby that you may feel like a slump. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have experienced that in all of mine. So,
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to wrap it up with, I think like you said, the social media stuff definitely adds a lot of pressure to feeling like you constantly need to be reading, because it seems mm-hmm. like everybody else is sometimes. But just kind of accepting that unless it's your job and you have to read every day, it's okay mm-hmm. to not read every day.
Yeah, exactly.
And to make sure that this hobby that you enjoy, you're prioritizing the enjoyment factor over yeah. like the work aspect of it. But those are my thoughts.
No, I think that's great. It is interesting you say this about switching genres, because I find it to be the opposite for me.
Oh, really?
I tend to be like, if I'm finished a great book and I'm on that high, I want to continue the high. Mm-hmm. So I want to hit something else. This is probably why I stay so heavily in the fantasy world.
Yeah.
Because I want to keep that going. So that's interesting. But also, that is great advice. If you are someone who's like, oh, well, I just get kind of stuck. It's like, mm-hmm. it's kind of realizing, thanks to my therapist, Paula, I think I've said this before, the differentiation between need to and want to.
Right.
Do you need to read? No, you don't need to read. Again, mm-hmm. unless there's a caveat. Do you want to read? And some days it's no. Some yeah. days it's no, I want to watch the newest movie. Or no, I just want to go have a beer with friends. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to feel guilty for that, right? It's not like, yeah, again, the quotas and the I've read these many books. It's fun to see, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like, it's making me feel bad about myself. You know, comparison is the thief of joy, but yeah, I think it's important to understand that distinction. And it's knowing yourself. It's knowing the highs and the lows of your slump, and mm-hmm. like when you can feel it coming, how do you prep for it? Because it's kind of like in the same way, you know, I struggle with depression, and sometimes I can feel it like coming.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Like, what are we going to do to mitigate? How are we going to get through this? And it's the same way with your hobbies. Everyone experiences slumps. That's just a normal course of creativity, even absorbing creative work. And yeah, you just tap into what you want. It's the same way that, you know, if you're a mood reader, you know, you don't want a sci-fi, but you want something fantasy, but you don't want something too heavy. So what are you going to do? Easy to find. Mm-hmm. Just go with that. So anyway.
Yeah. I like the point you said about knowing yourself, because it can vary drastically from person to person. Like, even as we see with, I like to vary genres and you like to stay in kind of stay in a closer realm. Yeah. So I think also experimenting more, if you haven't experimented enough to kind of know your preferences, can also help a lot in that way.
And the best way to do that is go to your library. Truly, if you have a hard time, just go now more than ever, especially mm-hmm. after last week's news. But
right.
Yeah, even if it's just to peruse, or go up to the librarians and be like, I'm in a reading slump, what do you recommend? And it's, one, you get to know your community way more, and two, mm-hmm. you can get some really awesome recs.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of not going to my local library enough. I need to do that.
Yeah. I volunteered for a while, and then I would go in every now and then, but because I've been on like a book buying ban, I haven't mm-hmm. been like, again, I've been in like a weird, like reading one book every other month maybe mm-hmm. And because I'm trying to get through my TBR, I'm not going to the library nearly as much, so I need to get back on. Even if you seriously, like, even if you go and check out a book and then never read it, that helps their numbers, and it doesn't even matter that you haven't finished it. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're going in and using your library actually genuinely helps them. So even if you just pop in to get like a cookbook or something like that, like,
yeah,
and never use it, it's really important. So
that's good to know. I didn't know that. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, you, like, no, there's no, like, librarian guard. Like,
yeah.
And being like, did you finish your book? So you can truly just, like, check out two and then let them sit next to your side table. And then when the due date comes, just go deliver it back. And
yeah.
that really, even that helps them. And if you don't have a library card, open one up. Mm-hmm. And even if you only use it once a year, the fact that you've opened it also helps their numbers. So
yeah,
the more you know.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to kind of switch gears for a second before we switch back to reading slumps in a different kind of way. I wanted to talk a little bit about our reading preferences. I know everyone, I think, is pretty well aware of like the genres we frequent and the authors we like and things like that. But I kind of wanted to tackle this from, how have your reading preferences changed over time? So maybe from like when you were a young child to now, and even, I guess, throughout adulthood, like how have your reading preferences changed, if at all, and have you noticed that affect your writing preferences, like the kind of stories you like to write as well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. It's very introspective. I think I tend to stick to the same themes that I did a little on the darker side, a little on like a little bit more on like the kind of like the hero's journey, but in less of a Harry Potter way now, and more of the reluctant, you're not that special hero, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I've switched from the chosen one kind of theme and more to the average everyday person has to take up the mantle, or they're like, you know, someone who's disappeared and has to come back, and they're the reluctant princess kind of a vibe. Obviously my interests have gotten darker as I've gotten older. I think exploring those really heavy, heavy themes is important, and not something I recognize I was interested in until much later, but that's kind of like where my, I was just like naturally inclined to go to these like very dark places. And that's still the case here. I think as a, you know, almost 31 year old now, the things I like less in books are like, I'm just getting, I don't know if it's getting older. If it's like sex out of nowhere for the sake of just having it in there, back in the day in high school and college, I obviously ate that up.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, sex in a book? No way. But now I'm like, okay, but is this relevant to the plot? Sometimes it is, and sometimes it's really well done. Sometimes it's not. And I'm like, why was this thrown in here? And then I can tell it's most of the time written by a man. But so that's like, if it comes out of the left field, I'm a little less like about it, and more of like, okay, like, just move on. Like, I think people underutilize the fade to black. I know a lot of people will disagree with me, but I love like a good like build up, and then ooh, something happened and now it's the next day. I'm like, okay, cool. I like that. So a little like the romantic side of like that. So yeah, I've gotten further away from like the romance component that I really loved as like a young adult. I'm way more into the plot and the dark themes and just seeing kind of like life reflected in these ways. I think that's for right now. That's what I've got.
Yeah, I think you covered a lot. I'm trying to think of how like trope wise and like more niche details, but other than just my interests have gotten darker over time, like from childhood to adulthood. Cause I feel like that's almost, I feel like that's kind of a universal thing. I don't know. Cause I feel like I still go back to the stories that I read as a child pretty frequently.
Same.
So,
I mean, same.
It's difficult. I mean, obviously like you grow out of certain things, like the really kid focused stuff. I would say maybe kind of from like early teenager to young adult, I went from edginess to like, okay, understanding that dark subject matter has to be handled in a like a certain way. I think my taste in like dark fantasy and things like that has evolved in that way. Because I have learned as an adult who is just only getting older, that things, that there are a lot of stories that don't handle those themes well. And they do come across as like, this was written by an edgy teenager, which, guilty as charged, probably would have enjoyed that a few years ago. It's always interesting to look back on those things too, like what, like how your tastes have changed. But as far as like the genres and stuff, I feel like those have always been pretty consistent for me, like fantasy, sci-fi, and then historical stuff is always great. Yeah. So, I don't have as like interesting of an answer as you at the moment.
I don't think it was interesting at all. I think it just like means I'm getting crotchety and older as I go on. Because like another one that came up for me was age, like the age of the main characters now. So it was actually interesting to me. I think T. Kingfisher writes like middle-aged adult fantasy so well. Like they're so good at making it feel like they're still kind of young, like the characters are young, but they're like in their mid-30s. I also just read an amazing advanced copy of a book that's coming out this month called The Raven Scholar. And I think I mentioned this either last episode or the episode before. Mira, can we just like not? Mira, and stop. You'll have to cut that out in reverse sign.
It's okay.
So, you know, the main character is like this 35-year-old like black woman, and it's like a high fantasy, and it was amazing, and it didn't feel like they were 35. And I don't know if that's because I'm older now, but older now, and that's like way more relatable. I think that if it's done well, and I think Brandon Sanderson is like an expert at this, is making like younger characters feel their age without being like insufferable. I think Vin is a great example from Mistborn. You know, she like comes in and she's like really young, and she's just like, but she's been through it, and she just feels more believable. That's her name, right? I haven't read Mistborn in a long time.
Say it again.
Read Mistborn? Vin? Is that her name?
I believe so. I actually have not read Mistborn. No, okay, guilty, okay. But I've heard the name, sure. So that name does sound familiar.
Again, it's been like years since I read it. So, anyway, he does a great job. Doing that and like walking that line between a young person feeling their age but also having a bit of like a believability to them. I'm less interested now in kind of like the Sarah J. Maas, like, oh, she's 17 and now she's like getting whisked away. It feels less fun to me now, I guess. So in the past like 5-6 years, I've shifted from like, oh my god, she's like 19 and this is crazy, and I'm like, oh, she's 19, like
no, okay. I actually get it. I feel like I'm slowly gravitating towards older characters as well. I didn't even think of that when we were talking about like the topic, so I'm glad you brought that one up, because my favorite character is like the right now, like the character trope is like the grizzled war veteran or mercenary in like fantasy who's like survived a lot of battles. He's old. The one series that does this really well is The Iconoclasts. I think it's an indie published book. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
But it follows a older sellsword, like after he's retired and everything. So it's really interesting to read from his perspective.
That's cool.
Because it was when at the time I read that, it was a lot different from most of like the POVs that I've read before that. Yeah. So it was an interesting read for sure.
And I kind of understand why so many, and I'm included in this because, you know, my characters tend to be on like the younger or mid-20s kind of side. But I think that's because I want to catch them, and I enjoy reading when it's done well, their growth as like an adult. I think it's obviously done really well in certain instances of like you're there with an older character from the beginning, and then you kind of learn their backstory and you fall into who they are. But, and of course there's change and things like that, but there is something kind of special about like watching a younger, more naive character grow up. But it, again, it has to feel believable in its way. I think like, you know, I disagree with you on a lot about G.R. Martin, but he does... He does the Stark children really well in that regard of just like they're young when we see them and we meet them. And then it's not the end, but by the time we see them last, they're like these hardened characters, and they're still young, but you know, we've been through it, and he'd never treated them like children. I mean, they obviously had their quarrels between Sansa and Arya, but that felt believable. So yeah, I think it's just a balance. So
yeah, it's interesting that the Stark children are like received so well too, because I know he's specifically with Bran being so young in the books, he's always mentioned that being like one of the most difficult POVs to write, because he's like, you know, being a 70-year-old man, it's really hard to get in the mind of a 10-year-old child. So I don't envy having to do that, especially for like such a crucial character. I feel like I'm still close enough in age to my characters. We're kind of either direction, so it's not too difficult.
That's
but
a good point.
All right. Well, I got one more topic for us today, Ash. This one is going to be kind of going off of a recent NPR poll that actually takes a look at reading aspirations versus reality. So I think this is kind of going hand in hand with our reading slump topic a little bit. But I'm just going to cite some of the numbers here. Mm-hmm. The poll says that while a majority of Americans recognize the value of reading, saying 82% see it as a means to learn about the world and 76% find it relaxing, only 51% have read a book in the past month. And then they cite competing activities like streaming services, social media, other life activities and things like that. And I'll get into some of the other numbers here soon, but there's a massive disconnect between like the amount of people who said they want to read and they see value in reading, they enjoy reading, versus the amount of people who have actually read a book in the past few months. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I think we can both relate to some degree where like we were just talking about, sometimes you want to read, but you're struggling to get into a book with a reading slump, or maybe sometimes it's the opposite and you don't want to read. But I don't think that really applies to this poll here. So what are your overall thoughts on the poll? And
it's really interesting.
Like with the disconnect between the desire to read and the actual activity of reading.
Yeah, I think, so I don't know, I'm probably wrong on some of what I'm about to say in terms of like, I can't really back up these facts. These are just like anecdotal opinions that I have. So prefacing with this, but I think that we are no longer really like, at least in my tax bracket, we are no longer like a group of leisure. I think we have a lot to do, right? We have work. We're very social nowadays. But work is catching up with a lot of people. It tends to follow people home. Mm-hmm. People are having families. So all the other like normal aspects of life don't leave much room anymore, especially with our like, some people don't even have PTO, but like limited PTO, limited ability to just like take a couple hours out of their day to go like, you know, hang out or whatever. So I think like the current climate doesn't lend itself to be a reader's paradise, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now that's no one's fault. It's not an excuse, but I do think that going back to like feeling guilty, it's like, but if you're working two jobs, or, you know, I feel like if you're an NPR poll, you're kind of also like a group of people who listen to NPR, which is, we can imagine them, me included. You know, so I think it's an important distinction. We're no longer kind of like at the whim and there are only four channels on TV or there's only like a limited number on cable and whatever. And another component is I think we're just tired. I think a lot of people are really just fatigued at the end of the day, and it's much easier to put on the newest Netflix series or Prime series and just kind of disconnect and not have to, you know, engage critically about things. You don't even have to engage critically, but like, you know, I'm like reading my fan fiction. I'm not working that hard mentally, but I am because, you know, I'm reading. But in terms of brain power, watching doesn't necessarily mean it's working your mind, unless you're like Ross, my partner, who is like watching films and like studying.
Yeah, right.
So I think I'm not surprised by the numbers. It makes me sad for sure that people like want to read more and they think it's important. But yeah, along with all the other things in life, I mean, really, who does?
Yeah.
Who has the time? We're not that guy that went viral for like waking up at 3 a.m. and like baths and stuff, right? Like that's not the average person.
Yeah,
I
think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But then you watch those, and as silly as that seems, and it is ridiculous and silly and probably not even true at all, you hear a lot in common culture of like, well, if you really, really want to do something, you need to wake up at 5 a.m. and you need to like, you know, spend these ridiculous amount of hours doing these things. Some people are built that way and some people it's easy for them to do and they have that drive. But I'm kind of looking at more of it just like the normal person, like the average person who's just trying their best and they like the concept of reading, but life's just too busy and there's just too much going on. There are too many choices.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you touched on like two of the really big camps that this applies to. The people who are too busy or too tired, like I know a lot of people, I think that this poll represents that, you know, that they would love to read more books, but they wake up early, they go to work, they come home, they take care of their family. And then like their last 2 hours of the day are like Netflix with their partner or maybe a game session or something like that. Like they don't really have a lot of brain power left for a book, like a sit down and read session. And even for me, like I work from home. I have that privilege. And I prefer to wake up early in the day. I'm not one of those people that's like, I get up 3 a.m, ice bath, like you said, but I do wake up early, like around 5, just because I like to get some stuff done before work. And that's typically when I'll do my reading, because that's when I found I'm most like mentally available for it. But again, that is coming from like a privileged position of I can do that with my current like work situation and everything. So there was definitely plenty of times that I wasn't able to do that due to work or other factors. So I can totally see where a lot of these people are coming from. I do like to see that the desire to read and the appreciation of like the importance of reading is still pretty high. Like that's high. That doesn't seem to have gone down significantly. That is something I always worry about with like the rise of social media and attention spans getting shorter and things like that, about people just caring less about books. So it is nice to see that like reading is still a respected activity, you know, people recognize the importance of it. And I don't think this camp is as large, but I definitely do know some people who are just really bad at managing time.
That's true too.
or easily distracted, like with the social media thing, like they do have really poor attention span. So they will scroll on their phone for 3 hours and then tell you they don't have time to read even though they want to. Yeah. So in my, those people, I'm not saying that poor is all of that. I think more of it is what, the first few camps we touched on, but I definitely do know people in that other camp as well, who like really want to do a lot of things and their social media, presence has just kind of like fried their attention span.
Yeah. Well, that's truly why I had to quit TikTok. I mean, Ross and I have come up with some really cool like content ideas that I'd like to do in the near future that I think I'm going to do. And I'm grappling with like whether or not I want to put it on TikTok because I still have like a good enough following. But with all this stuff going on, I'm also like, I don't know if that's the right move at all. And also just like with the politics of it all, just icky, you know? Whatever. But that's not to shame anybody who's still on it. I think that, I mean, that was a big portion. I was spending hours scrolling, you know?
Yeah.
And social media is specifically designed to work with our brain in the worst ways.
Yeah.
So it's, well, some of it is our fault. You know, just like, don't do that. And it's hard and it's not easy and all these kind of like other caveats. But also, yeah, we're working kind of against a multi-billion-dollar machine who's trying everything to make us glued to these phones. So yeah, I totally agree with you. I think also some people just are like, oh yeah, I am bad at time management, or you know, for me, I'm like, you know what, waking up at 6 to read my book and have my coffee sounds amazing, but then my alarm goes off at 6 and I'm like, no. So it's like it's resistance, you know, it is big R resistance. It's like, oh, do you really want it that hard then? Because I also know someone who gets up at 5 every morning to play video games for 2 hours until he has to log on to work. And that's his time for himself. And, you know, it is. It's just like about how much do you want it? But I'm also not blaming the person who has like a newborn or has a toddler and a job or whatever. So it's encouraging that the number is that high. I think it is a really good sign. I think with like the, you know, we were just talking about audiobooks, it's also a great way for people to just like engage with literature. Some people argue it's not reading based on like the literal definition of the word, but you know, you still are absorbing literature. I don't know what the right word for that is. Tons of different ways.
Audiobooks are actually how my brother, he works like 12-hour days, 6 days a week, but he's listening to audiobooks like during his whole shift. So he gets through them fast because he's usually like listening for most of the shift. So that's 12 hours a day of audiobooks. So he's reading a lot. I think there's definitely ways like you can work it in, but also some of it is just like we said, you know, tired, burnout. Some people aren't able to do that. It's just, it really just depends on your individual situation.
I think also, like people get overwhelmed by choice, just like as a last aside. I know a lot of people don't like, you know, Sarah J. Maas for good reasons. But she got a lot of middle-aged women back into reading because of the popularization of it. So, and I know people stay on TikTok for the book recommendations, for better or for worse. But I think that it's the same with, like, the choice fatigue that I get when I, like, go on Netflix or something at this point. I'm like, I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want to watch. And I have a bajillion choices.
Like,
so if you're just getting back into reading, or you see that set and you go, you know what, I'm going to try and prioritize reading, but I haven't picked up a book in God knows how long, you know, maybe you go to a classic first and you're like, this is really dry. Like, no one's going to pick up Anna Karenina on their first, you know, attempt at reading again and be like, this is fantastic. I mean, it is fantastic, but you know what I mean? It's just like, whatever. But then you go to, like, the bookstore and you're like, where do I start? Or you go to the library, like, where, and that's what librarians are for. But, you know, I think people get a little overwhelmed by choice and they just don't even know what they like to read yet. And then you read a little bit of a book and maybe you're like, oh, I don't like this. So that's like a false start.
Yeah.
And then you have to either go, do I want to give this another shot? Which I think is fun. You get to choose, pick and choose what you like. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, definitely a lot of choice paralysis for sure.
That's the phrase I was looking for, choice paralysis.
I do. That would be an interesting topic to explore again in the future too, because I have some ways that I've learned to manage my own choice paralysis. Because that was something I struggled with a lot last year too. And I've come up with like a strategy that works for me. But
yeah, mine is only read your TBR.
Yeah,
because. Once you get through that, oh, the world just opens up.
Right.
And then I say that, and then I, like, ask for advanced copies of books, and I don't stick to that.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, Ashley, I think that's going to do it for our topics. Did you have any writing resource you wanted to share? I kind of have a cheat one this week, but...
I don't have a resource, but the American Library Association desperately needs our support. So if you want to donate and or just read up and share as much as you can, I think this is probably just going to be like my soapbox for a while, but truly just support your like local libraries. Go in. If you don't have a library card, get one. Even if you don't plan on reading, do what I said earlier. Check books out and just even if you don't read them, that still counts towards their stats and that's how they get funding.
Yeah.
Just be like an advocate for libraries right now.
Yeah, for sure. We love our libraries. They do they do a great job. Well, my resource is kind of a cheat one. I'm gonna use Brandon Sanderson's 2025 BYU writing lectures. His previous series was very helpful to me as I was getting back into writing, and so I was super happy to see that he was kind of refreshing the playlist with a modern up-to-date version of his lecture series. I am not all the way through it yet, but so far they've been great, just like the last one. So if you want to hear from, I'm sure you've seen the other ones and probably some of the new ones as well. But it's just a great look into writing from someone who's a professional in the field with significant levels of success. So definitely give those a watch. They're like an hour to an hour and a half each. And I like to watch them free of distraction, but I know some people who will listen to them in the background sometimes as well. So
nice.
Really just depends on your focus. But yeah, that's my resource for this week's episode.
That's actually been on my to-do when I have like a free weekend in the next like month or so, is like in the morning, like make my coffee and like watch it and treat it as like I'm in class, like master class.
Yeah. TV. Yeah. It's fun. So,
10 out of 10. Excellent resource, and it's not a cheap one. We love a brand DC around here. So.
All right, well, Ash, I think that's going to do it for Quill and Query. Of course, we'll open it up to the chat if anyone's still with us to ask any questions or suggest any topics. But did you have any closing words for anybody before we sign off today?
No closing words. Glad we're back in action. I'm sure this summer we'll have some off and on moments as well.
Yeah, but for sure.
I think we've hit the year mark, as we were talking about before we started recording. So maybe next one we do a little, because I know Nicole brought it up, but maybe we talk about our own work.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Really fun. I would like to pick your brain a little more about this, Mr. Ironclad. Never give us anything.
Yeah, I'll just we'll see about that. No, oh, for sure. I definitely want to talk more about our works in progress. I think that would be a very good next episode, if not next episode, yeah. one of the future ones for sure. But yeah, I don't have any closing thoughts either, other than it's great to be back. Thanks everyone who joined us, and thanks Ash as always for being such a great co-host. And as always, we'll see you guys in, I think, 2 weeks, but
2 weeks.
Just follow our socials. You'll get the updates. Yeah. So.
You know how it goes with us nowadays. We're very laid back. All right, y'all. Have a good night. It's good to see everybody.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.